And we can begin. So hello all and welcome to the CCG weekly meeting. Today is Tuesday, August 15th, and we are getting together today to talk about, notably the digital credential wallet and verifier solicitation that recently has gone out from DHS S&T. So we have Anil John graciously with us today to, talk about some of that and then answer questions for the community. Just a quick reminder that we do abide by a code of ethics and professional conduct. I will put a link to that in the chat just in case folks are not familiar with it, but it's the basic rules of be kind to one another, right? And by and large, this community abides by that. And it's great. The slides for today have been posted to the mailing list. So if you don't have them, they are up there. A note that anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you are contributing to an actual work item, like say writing code or writing a report or things like that in any kind of substantive way, you do need to be a member of the CCG, and that is free. I've put a link to that there. That is primarily in case you are new to this community for IPR reasons. We don't want contributions coming in that someone later tries to claim intellectual property rights over and things like that, because that has been problematic to standards and open source bodies in the past. Minutes and meeting of this will be posted to our GitHub. Quick note of operations, we do use the Jitsi chat, which is also linked to the IRC channel CCG on the W3C IRC. For managing the meeting. So the transcriber dumps all of our minutes, excessively into that chat, unfortunately. But also probably more importantly, we, take questions and answers. I will be monitoring that, for folks that, want to ask a question. So if you want to ask a question or make a comment, type the letter Q followed by a plus sign and add yourself to the queue, optionally with a reminder. And if you need to pull yourself off, you just reverse the plus sign to a minus. And I will paste those instructions right here. Sometimes things come out from the transcriber are not always the same as they actually are in practice. Quick pause for introductions and reintroductions. So anyone new to this call, never been here before, or changed affiliations recently and wants to reintroduce themselves or introduce themselves to the first time to this community? Pause. You can just either hit the hand raise or come off mic, whatever you're comfortable with. Cool. So we all know each other then. Want to take a second pause and just see if there are any announcements or reminders from the community. Kalia.
So we have the Internet Identity Workshop coming up October 10 to 12. And as in preparing for that, I'm actually just posted to the list yesterday a request for help if people would like to contribute. We're working on putting together a online memorial for community members who've passed and a physical version of that for sort of placement at all future IIWs. I kind of did a makeshift one for the last day of the last IIW, but it wasn't particularly beautiful. So I'm seeking creative talent and writing talent to help get the bios of folks together. I put a link to the bios or sort of links to information about the folks who've passed in the community. Let me know if I've missed anybody. And also would love, you know, this is a good low hanging fruit way to help the community write a kind of community obituary of a few paragraphs, sentences. So would love help, in both regards, the physical, helping make the physical memorial beautiful and also helping with the online webpage on the IIW site.
Awesome. Thanks, Kalia. E. Connell, you are up.
Hello, everybody. This is Erica, and I just wanted to give you a reminder that Rebooting the Web of Trust is also coming up September 18th to the 22nd. This year we'll be convening in Cologne, Germany, and I'll put a link to the Eventbrite in the chat. Thanks.
Awesome. Manu, I believe you are next.
Hey, Mike, thanks. Two announcements. One of them is around the Credential Handler API Playground, the Chappy Playground. Just a week ago or so, we added multi-credential verification to the Playground. So this is something that's being used in the Jobs for the Future, PlugFest number 3. We had multi-issuer, you know, support in there. We've added verifier support, and now you can do multi-shot credentials in a verification. So I put a link to that announcement, kind of instructions on how you can test that out. We do also have a number of other kind of upcoming improvements to the Playground, including things like support for OID for VCI, so the OpenID stuff. So that'll be the first time the Playground supports multiple protocols. We're talking with people about putting BidCom protocol support in there as well. And, you know, there's some discussion happening on the mailing list on that. So that's the Chappy Playground update for today. The other heads up to the group is we had moved over some of the test suites that were worked on in this community for Verifiable Credential Data Model 2.0, Data Integrity, ECDSA, EDDSA. Those have now been fully moved over to the Verifiable Credentials Working Group and have been updated. So they're now fully operational in the Verifiable Credentials Working Group. If you like integrating with bleeding edge test suites, please reach out and ask to add yourself. We have had a couple of people from the community, like Trinsic was the latest one that added themselves to various test suites. The test suites will be increasingly locked down towards the end of September. And that's when we'll make the general announcement to like participate in the test suites, most likely. But if you want to kind of just get the mechanics of integrating with the test suites, let us know. We are actively working with, multiple different organizations to integrate them in there. That's it. That was the second one.
Awesome. Thanks, Manu. And it's good to see multiple protocols coming in. So that's awesome. And I think Anil has an announcement as well.
Thank you, Mike. Just a quick note. The Internet Architecture Board has, you know, started a new listserv for identity discussions. They want to discover what protocols and technologies and work that is going on in Internet identity. And what are the gaps out there? I know that there is a tendency in a variety of SDOs and community groups to sort of stay in your own silo. This may be worthwhile at a minimum to subscribe to and listen and contribute, because often there are definite blind spots for the people who are sort of, talking about the work that they're not aware of other work that is going on. I was amused by the discussion on somebody brought up SAML and somebody was not sure how prevalent it was. I thought it was amusing. So things like that, right? So check it out. Check out the archives, and you may want to, you know, at least monitor and make sure that the work everyone is doing at the W3C that is related to identity are also, you know, broadly socialized with the broader community that is working through the IAB as well.
Thank you, Anil, for bringing that up. Yeah, definitely. It's been interesting. I was actually very glad, at the last IETF when some of those initial conversations were going on that, Kalia and a few others from this community were in the room, because, there might have been a perception that identity might not have been as complicated as it sometimes tends to get. With that, let me see if there are any other. I think that's it for announcements. So with that, Anil, I'm going to pass it over to you, and just let me know when you want me to advance slides, and my screen should be up momentarily.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whatever the time zone that everybody is in. Thank you, Kerry, Mike, and Harrison for the invitation to come and chat to the CCG community here. For whatever reason, my work laptop, the CCG link is absolutely blocked on my work laptop. And of course, I tested for my personal laptop, and it just so happens Jitsi seems to have problems with Brave, at least on sharing. So Mike was kind enough to, take the slides and present it. So first and foremost, I'm hoping that this is going to be mostly, questions that you might have, after obviously you've, read the solicitation. I'm going to give a very high overview, primarily because I'm going to point you to this. This Friday, we are actually going to have a public industry day. It is available both in person in Birmingham, Alabama, as well as remotely over Zoom. It is free to attend, and we're very happy with the particularly with the online registration so far, but you do need to register so that you can get the link and things like that. So by all means, if you're interested in this topic, and what is going to be much more, I think, relevant to you is my program, Silicon Valley Innovation Program within DHS, does not just work on random stuff that we think is a great idea, right? So we actually are driven by, trying to shape the technology that our business units see as important to them. So in this particular case, the primary drivers for this solicitation, which we call a call, it is just internal terminology, is U.S. Customs and Border Protection and U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, two of the oldest parts of the U.S. government that have been around as long as America has been around, dealing with cross-border trade, tourism, travel, and immigration, as well as our DHS privacy office. They are the primary drivers and customers for this work. So you're going to be hearing directly from them during the industry day. So by all means, come and join us. Next slide. We've had this is not my first rodeo with the CCG. So that we've been doing work in this area for a long while. Everything from funding what eventually became decentralized identifiers standard at the W3C to helping bring our use cases and our needs to the work that is going on, and that went into, verifiable credentials 1.0, 1.1, and hopefully 2.0 as well. So this is not new for us. So back in 2018, we are actually rather happy with the solicitation that we had back in the day. We have 7 companies that are in our portfolio that was selected very competitively from a global cohort. You know many of them. So I won't repeat any of that. In general, though, we are comfortable with the, in particular, with the issuance infrastructures that those companies have built out that are completely standards-based using W3C standards and things like that. And you know this if you heard me speak previously, right? My comment always when people ask me about digital wallets and things like that has always been, hey, we don't have a digital wallets play. We want you to bring your own wallet to the table. We want to make sure there is a way to sort of understand the security, privacy, and interoperability aspects of those wallets. And we don't see ourselves being in the digital wallet, playing field in a lot of ways other than being a consumer of it. Fast forward to now, and that has actually changed for a couple of reasons, right? One of them is we are seeing what, you know, our hope was that obviously the all pieces of the, you know, three-party identity model, whether it's, you know, the issuer, the holder and the wallet and the verifier would sort of mature along and move along, in a consistent way. And what we're seeing is that it is not, right? So, there is a whole bunch of work that is obviously going on defining what the data model to represent the payload that is moved around is. And given that we are the identity community and we specialize in reinventing ways to move things from point A to point B, there is a whole slew of protocols that are coming on board and being matured in order to move things from point A to point B. We consider ourselves from both as an issuer and as a verifier. There is a significant gap that's going on here where there's a lot of hand-waving that's going on. What are, if a wallet comes to our front door, how do we as an issuer verify and have confidence in the capabilities that that wallet has in the, in how they are, you know, protecting the information, how they are, you know, making sure that that information that is there, is indeed something that is managed in a privacy respecting manner. It is fully under the control of that person that is actually the holder of that wallet and things like that. And we are actually frankly disappointed in the amount of work that is going on in that area compared to obviously all of the excitement, the drama and the politics around the protocols and the payloads. So we spoke internally, particularly now that the people side of Customs and Border Protection have come on board. So what I mean by that is in this solicitation back in 2018, I had Customs and Border Protection as one of our primary customers. But that was the U.S. customs side, global trade facilitation side of it, right? So these are the people who are interested in digitizing cross-border trade documents. They were not in the, these are not, they are not the people that you encounter when you land in a port of entry, whether it is air, land or sea. And the blue uniform person who greets you is not the customs people. They are actually another part of U.S. Customs and Border Protection, what we call Office of Field Operations. They are the law enforcement officers that are in the business of ensuring and checking your identity and your credentials and your attestations at the border, as part of trade facilitation, excuse me, travel facilitation and tourism facilitation. They're finally, on board. They are continuing the partnership that they have with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service. So the focus for us tended to be in this call, very much a people-centric, how do we help move the wallet ecosystem forward, right? So that's sort of the rationale for why the call and the focus on, you know, wallets and verifiers came into play here. So next slide, Mike. Thank you. I would also note that one of the things that we sort of internalized over our experiences since 2018 in this ecosystem and what we're seeing in the ecosystem is, to be blunt, vendors build products, but ecosystems actually really need building blocks that everybody can use. And vendors typically are not interested or motivated in order to contribute or build those building blocks, because unless it is SDKs that point to their own infrastructure, right? So we wanted to make sure that while we are putting out a solicitation that is obviously going to solve our needs, but we also wanted to make sure that the things that sort of were building blocks that could help solve this were also of use to the broader ecosystem and the community. So we structured our solicitation very specifically in order to enable both, you know, products and capabilities that we actually need, as well as building blocks that are, you know, important and hopefully relevant to the broader community as well. So next slide. And what you will see when you, you know, read our solicitation tends to be that you will see, you know, this is government speak, so forgive me as I go into technical topic area one and technical topic area two. That basically means that these are the fundamental core capabilities that we are actually going to be paying money for and we are actually seeking. And there are two, a digital wallet and a mobile verifier. Those are distinct and, you know, obviously there are components that are common between them and we'll talk about that. But those are the two products that we are asking for in the solicitation. And a company that is actually applying to that solicitation can choose to apply to solving, you know, the build out of just the digital wallet, build out of just the mobile verifier, or both. It is up to them, depending on what their interests are, what their competencies are, and what their capabilities are, and what their path to market is, right? So, but we also structured it such that, again, we are fully expecting this to be, you know, fully commercial, you know, to be blunt, whether it, you know, it depends on the business model of the company, whether their model is to produce an open source or a closed source product. We are perfectly fine with either, but the digital wallet and the mobile verifier can be, you know, can be open source completely. Or it can be, you know, a closed source, product that a company is bringing into market. Closed source doesn't mean that you, does not mean that, we are, ignoring open standards, and the need for interoperability there. But we wanted to make sure that, you know, it is, we are fully expecting, as part of our solicitation to pay for the build out of, you know, digital wallets and mobile verifiers. But we are also expecting that we sort of stepped back and thought to ourselves, what are some of the core components that we're not seeing investment in the marketplace that we believe should be paid attention to when you are building a digital wallet or a verifier? And we sort of, you know, group them into, you know, for lack of a better word, you know, four libraries. And and you know, at a high level, you know, there are the libraries are a library, an SDK that basically just does cryptographic operations. These are everything from, encryption, digital signatures, selective disclosure crypto. You know, again, you can read a lot more details in the call itself, but the intent is that, this SDK, this library should be something that somebody can, you know, take off the shelf, basically bake into an existing wallet or a verifier, and get the ability to actually, you know, do all the cryptographic operations that are needed in order to issue, store, and verify and validate, you know, W3C, VC, and DID-based credentials, right? And I think, and we're also, we have a pointer in there, and all too often, there is a whole bunch of excitement, particularly within government, around privacy-enhancing technologies, and there is a whole bunch of, you know, magical, you know, white papers that come out there. But one of the challenges that, obviously, as a government agency, that all government agencies within the U.S. have, is that we are very interested in implementing those technologies, but we are also constrained by something that is a law called FISMA that requires that the cryptography that basically is deployed on U.S. government networks has to meet specific information protection standards. And to date, a lot of the, you know, the fascinating crypto that goes into what takes in order to do, you know, non-correlatable, you know, selective disclosure, a lot of the other things, like zero knowledge proofs and things like that are not approved crypto. Those are not, you know, they've not gone to the, FIPS validation and things like that. So we are obviously having conversation internally in order to, you know, move, change that. But at the same time, we're also seeking to make sure that the libraries, particularly the cryptographic tools library, is something that is set up such that it can go through the CMVP, you know, the cryptographic module validation program. That is a program that is jointly run by the NIST as well as the equivalent on the Canadian government side. Right. So these are approved cryptographic modules. They don't have to be hardware. They can very well be software. And we are hoping to line up these cryptographic modules and tools SDK such that they can go through that particular approval process as well. Right. And the other piece of it tends to be, you know, we obviously want to make sure in a wallet, how do you manage storage? Is the storage remotely within the wallet itself, or is it similar to the model that we have in the host card emulation in the payment space where the actual storage becomes an HSM in the cloud where what is on the local wallet is basically a shim that's pointing to it? I think there are some lessons learned from that space that can also apply to our credential wallet space as well. A third one is obviously metadata management. What I mean by that is if you're an issuer or if you are of a credential, so the ability to retrieve metadata about your issuance process. How do I, you know, retrieve a DID document that allows me to obtain the, the public keys that I use in order to validate the digital signature on a verifiable credentials. How do I retrieve the status list that allows us to retrieve, the current status of the credential in a privacy respecting manner? So those are types of metadata management that I think that are really, really important. And I think that is worthwhile in a nice little SDK as well. And last but not least, you know, everybody talks about, security at rest, security in transit, but nobody seems to talk about security while in operation. And I think the combination of things like confidential computing, remote attestation work that is being standardized at the IETF, there is a play here where you can have confidence that the incredibly important things like cryptographic keys and, sensitive data are actually stored not just in transit and in, transit and in storage, but also in operations and at scale. So we believe that there is a play here for encouraging a component and a capability that, brings, the confidentiality, integrity, production computing into the digital wallet as well. Right. So this is sort of the way that our call is actually structured. The expectation is that if you are responding and saying that you want to build a digital wallet for us, there is a clear requirement that you will at least have at a minimum one of those cryptographic modules that you will be contributing to, building out, and you will be providing under an open source license that allows both the development of both open source and closed source on top of it, because people will have both. So think something like Apache 2, a license or something like that, right? So the expectation is that if you're building out a proposal for building a digital wallet or a mobile verifier, we are expecting that some of the foundational pieces within there are going to be open source. That is going to be incredibly useful and hopefully broadly applicable to the broader community as well. So I'll reiterate, I think a lot of the people who've heard me and know about SVIP know this, but in general, we have one of the few programs within the U.S. government that does not believe, that believes that talent doesn't stop at borders. So our solicitation tends to be global. So we have companies that are from all across the world in our portfolio, and we look forward to applications from companies from all across the world. Click on that SAM.gov link. It'll take you to the actual, fully fleshed out government URL that is not, conducive for, human consumption. It'll be taken there where you can download the application and the full call and things like that. The application deadline itself is, you know, 15th of September at that time, right? So I'm going to stop there, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. And if I'm not able to provide an answer right now, I hope I will be better prepared with an answer during our industry day this Friday. You don't have to come to Birmingham, but if you join online, you'll be able to hear everything and also ask questions as well. And on that note, I'm going to turn it over to folks to ask any questions you might have.
Awesome. Thanks, Anil. I really appreciate the overview here. You piqued my interest with OSL item D there, the confidentiality and integrity side of compute. Yep. Are you expecting that to cover like fully homomorphic encryption and some of the other things we're seeing finally kind of get some, not just adoption, but broad usage? Because that is one of those fascinating areas that lets you keep data protected while still performing things like machine learning or verification on top of information without ever decrypting it. I mean, is that an area that you think the program is interested in, or?
I think, forgive me as I answer it, it may very well be my ignorance and my lack of understanding as well. I think when you talk about the fundamental, you know, cryptographic primitives that are needed in order to enable homomorphic encryption or, you know, zero knowledge proofs or selective disclosure or FIPS compliance and things like that, we sort of expect that to sort of live in the cryptographic tools SDK. Right.
Okay.
The OSLD, the confidentiality and integrity protected computing, in a lot of ways, for us, it turns out to be, as we all know, you know, chipset manufacturers these days are building in enclaves that basically allow for computation to occur within that secure enclave, and
right,
you know, and the standards like RATS and others at IETF give you confidence around the attestations about that things are being done in the right way.
Yeah.
So we sort of see, so how does that apply to our world? I think a lot of people sort of see that as that's somebody else's thing. We don't. We think that there is a play here where, you know, if cloud-based vendors are basically deploying technology that allows for confidential computing and supporting standards that allow us to verify using hardware level attestations about how they are doing it.
Right.
It means that we can offload a set of processing and storage to those enclaves, for example, key, you know, cryptographic key management, cryptographic, you know, encryption, or a cryptographic operations to this. So we sort of see that as the OSLD. I also think that, you know, I would simply note that there is a ways to go here. So we're not expecting magic to fully bloom, but we also think that it is important enough in order to basically put a wedge in there and to put some funding behind it in order to move it forward, so that it is useful broadly and becomes part and parcel of how we provide end-to-end security in the digital credentialing ecosystem.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And I definitely see how that stuff kind of rides together. Awesome. Cool. Harrison.
Yeah. So to clarify, like, digital wallet is about presenting a presentation of credentials, and mobile verifiers is about verification of credentials. Is that correct? And, if so, what are the more kind of detailed prior requirements for the digital wallet and mobile verifiers?
So you're asking a good question, and this is my, I am going to flip that right back on the community, right? So for the last 2 to 3 years, every single time that you've heard me talk, I have been talking about the fact that we need to, as a community, agree on what are the things that make a wallet secure. What are the foundational security properties? What are the foundational privacy properties? What are the interoperability properties that are core to what makes a wallet secure? Because in the absence of that, you will default to picking a vendor's wallet rather than making a capability assessment. And I think what I'm saying and what we are trying to motivate through this call is that bootstrap the work or energize the work or highlight the work that is needed in that space that is not happening right now. In my world, could we come up with a set of criteria on wallets that are, that are sufficient to meet the Department of Homeland Security needs? Yes. Could we come up with a bespoke way of figuring that whether a wallet that is coming to us could meet those criteria? Yes. Is that actually going to help the broader ecosystem? I would argue no. I think this is something that across both the public and the private sector, we need to define that criteria so that we actually have a common understanding of what is out there. So to the answer to the question, Harrison, is very simple. We have a sense of what it is because of some of the work that we have done internally, but we also think much more work needs to be done, and we expect that work around the digital wallet to be part of that, to be very much focused on that. Is that helpful? I know I may have wandered in the wilderness to your question, Harrison.
No, helpful. Thanks. And then, sorry, one more clarification question. So, earlier you mentioned that these two functionalities or these two areas can be in one application or service. And then you also mentioned that it can be separate. So
No. What I meant by that is basically when somebody applies to our solicitation, they have to tell us what they are working on. Are you working on a digital wallet? Are you working on a mobile verifier? Are you working on both? Right. So what I mean, we do not want a combined verifier wallet at this point in time. In fact, I don't think that makes sense, particularly since we actually are hoping and expecting that the digital wallets responses will not purely be software-based digital wallet, but also be, hardware-based digital wallets as well. I'm a big fan of the work that Mudge did back in the day with Project Vault at Google ATAP. So I'm hoping a new generation of that will come along as well. That's exactly what we meant. So, pick both to work on, but they'll be separate products. Harrison.
Thank you.
Yeah. And just a quick, before I move to Manu, if you are not familiar with the hardware folks that work in this space, the ARM folks and the Intel folks are probably the two that I would talk to first if you wanted someone amenable to open standards, they tend to hang out at IETF. So that's just throwing that out there. Manu.
Thanks, Mike. This is great, Anil. Really good information for folks that, want to apply in to understand kind of where some of the future development work is going to be focused. So I'm trying to think about how organizations might game this to make it seem like they're providing something useful when they're not really. So things like, sure, we've got a proprietary wallet and we're providing this open source library SDK, but it's written in such a way that it's only really useful in their proprietary wallet. It's so deeply ingrained that nobody else can really reuse it. Are there any kind of nudges that the organizations applying are going to get that where they need to demonstrate that, one, they haven't just taken somebody else's work and done a minor amount of work on it and produced that as the open source thing they're working on, do they have to demonstrate, the open source library that they've created is actually getting traction in the ecosystem? Thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a valid question. And a couple of, one of the reasons that we've done this, dance before. In fact, we did this previously with our SBOM work as well, in order to sort of help the ecosystem while actually building our products. To your point, though, the expectation of anybody who responds to it is first and foremost, if that cryptograph, those SDKs will truly be open source products, which means that they will indeed be, you know, public, accessible to all. It will not be behind a closed GitHub repo. We will work with them to find a proper home such that they are actually, encouraged and expected, to have, folks outside of the people that we fund, contribute to those tools and those SDKs as well. And separately, we're big in, being very encouraging and supporting, in the early phases of our work. But when we get to the phase three pieces of it, right? So one of the things that we will do, in particular with this, we will go beyond the standard independent red team that we will actually have in place, we already have in place for our programs, down to the code level reviews, and use those reviews as a mechanism to actually get input and feedback from the broader community to ensure that it is indeed, broadly usable and not just, constructed in a way just to tick the box and useful only for the one company that is working on it. On that note, open request to the community. You all know how to work this and to game this. Any suggestions that you have to us in order to watch to make sure, what are the things that we should be looking at to make sure it is not being gamed? Because our hope and our intent and our desire here is that this becomes something that is truly useful for the community. And the reason that we will have a fully independent code review of these open source codes, code is to make sure that you all have confidence in that code so that you are free to use them. I would make an argument that this work is going to be useful to you. So help us to make sure that the output that is coming out remains useful to you and not proprietary. Beyond that, we will play it as it comes, Manu.
Awesome. Maybe a little bit of a technical question here, Anil, because I know there's some back channel stuff flying around too not really back channel, but IETF stuff flying around that doesn't always get on, the radar here. But one of the areas that I think is really interesting is thinking about how do we combine U.S. Gov requirements with global requirements, right? Because different jurisdictions are going to have different sets of things that are, very, very helpful, right? And so one of the things I've been working on for a while now is a couple areas of post-quantum cryptography side of things and the applications of those things, right? And so Japan, for instance, as well as some others and commercial entities here in the U.S. have a high interest in ENTRU as a chem, even though NIST is rolling with Kyber. And when I think about chems in particular, they seem like they have a whole lot of application here in terms of the digital wallet space, or could, right? And what we're seeing with changes and updates in terms of HPKE and ways of exchanging this stuff and, more common ways could be really, really important to this. And it's not an area that I've seen the VC or the wallet space really start to jump on heavily. Possibly because it's earlier, or possibly just because it's sitting more at the TLS layer and stuff like that now and before it expands out later. Is that an area that you think could or should be explored as part of this stuff? What are your thoughts on kind of that interop between obviously meeting NIST and FIPS requirements here in the States, but also making sure that interoperability is possible with, say, the EU or, trusted parties like Canada, right, that we have a lot of exchange back and forth with, et cetera. Any thoughts on that?
So I'll start out with, noting that, the SVIP is not an R&D program, right? So there are other parts of my organization that absolutely, you know, fund, you know, R&D. And in a prior role that I had as the identity management and data privacy R&D program manager, I was actually doing that. I'm not doing that anymore. So what you will see in the call itself is things that we, the business units that are in play, who are interested in deploying these technologies really need to have in order to actually enable these technologies. Now, there could be somebody who comes to the table and said, yep, we will provide that, but we're also going to, you know, work on these additional things, you know, beyond that. And our answer is you are absolutely free to do so. We're not going to constrain the things. For example, there might be, you know, there is a community out here, obviously, that is very much focused on things like anon creds, and ACDC and things of that nature, right? So, those are not things that we have an interest in, currently. And I think our, you know, articulation of the profile, you know, shows what our interests are. But if a company that was really had an expertise in that, wanted to do the work that is needed in order to meet our requirements, but as part of that work also incorporated those into those cryptographic modules, we would have no issues with them. We would actually, you know, be very happy because it actually provides, you know, broader, you know, hope to the community more than anything else. Separately, Mike, I think, you know, one of the interesting, conversations, one of the interesting perspectives that a business side of my organization brings to the table that I may not bring as a, you know, technologist is more from the perspective that when it comes to, you know, interoperability, particularly across jurisdictions and borders, I would make a point that it is really, really important that one needs to have a common understanding of the security, privacy, and interoperability as a foundation. But there is a layer about that that basically talks to mutual recognition agreements between countries. You know, a classic case in point is, for example, the U.S. Customs side of our organization and what we call the, you know, CTPAT program, right, which is our trusted trader program. So if you're familiar with Global Entry and Nexus and Sentry and things like that, think about that for traders. So, and the foundation of it is very simple, is that there is a cybersecurity criteria that was developed that basically countries sort of assess themselves against and show that they are meeting them both on the U.S. side and on a counterparty. And if they do that, there is a formal mutual recognition agreement that is put into place that between those two countries that basically says that, hey, you know, goods coming from your country with this type of accreditation associated with that will be allowed for fast track import into the country. And it, because it is a mutual recognition program, what we send to that country is also recognized as there as well. There is a lot of energy and excitement around all of the work that is going on in the EU digital wallet and obviously the wallet work that we're doing. And I'm sure the wallet work that is happening globally as well. And the foundation of all of that is those technical pieces. But I would also say is that we're not blindly going to, you know, there is a policy layer on top of the technology there as well. So when we talk to our Canadian colleagues, we are going to make sure that there is a, you know, an understanding of our common security perspective that we are all comfortable with. And we do this, we will do the same, you know, with the EU as well and go from there. So it is not a matter of we will blindly incorporate into our tooling that's what somebody else has developed. It is based on that, you know, foundational security expectations that we mutually agree upon. And that is what I don't see happening within the broader community. That public private discussion around what makes a good wallet and how do you assess a good wallet as being quote unquote good, and what are the things that make it good and what are the things that make it not so good. Everybody wants to talk about moving things from point A to point B. That's great. Happy for you. There are other pieces that need to mature as well. Sorry, bit rambling there, Mike.
No, that was Mike, that was awesome. Of, yeah.
Bit of frustration and a one of the rationale for why this call is out there.
No, and awesome, and I fully agree. Right, it's really easy in the tech world to get really buried in the weeds as opposed to thinking about how are we going to actually practically get stuff done in a way that can be communicated to human beings. Manu, and then I think Carrie, and I'm going to close the queue at this point just because we're going to run up on time. So Manu, fire, take away.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Anil, you covered one of my questions, which was what do we, meaning the community, think about what's happening in the EU with the ARF and the digital wallet stuff. So I think that was clear. You know, there are multiple entities that are in the ecosystem, and at some point we're going to all have to read each other's credentials and interface with each other's systems. Going back to the question that you raised to the community about, you know, what can be done to ensure that the right outcomes happen. So with the open source libraries, I think one of the dangers here is that there are multiple people that work on item A, the cryptographic tools SDK, and you don't get any takers for B, C, or D, right? So one of these things is a bit easier to do than the other things. And so I'm wondering if there has been kind of thought put into how do you make sure that there's even coverage of implementations. And then of course, how do you ensure that people are actually going to use this? There almost needs to be some kind of measurable, components to, there's actually uptake of these open source libraries, because, the last thing I think any of us want is the creation of an open source library at, great cost to, the U.S. federal government, which then does not have any uptake whatsoever. So just some thoughts there. I don't know if I'm wondering if those kinds of things are going to be kind of a constant conversation with the various communities, and if so, how do the people that apply to this initiative have a concrete target to shoot at. The other thing I wanted to mention is, nowhere have I seen the dollar figure that's attached to this, initiative, and the fact that it's non-dilutive funding. Like there are a number of companies here that are building, these things, that are somewhat new to the ecosystem that probably need to hear that this is a potentially multi, million dollar investment in their technology that's non-dilutive. I think it's a really powerful message that I haven't seen hit on, at least recently. Anyway, just some thoughts there.
Yeah, I'll stop there, Manu. I will go back to our 2018 solicitation. As I mentioned, we had 200 plus applicants. We started with, I think, making around 10 selections. Over time it became, seven for a variety of different reasons. What I would say is that, we multi-track, we fund multiple companies simultaneously to solve the same problem. And each company has the potential of getting up to $1.7 million, each company. And that's not, across all of them, that's up to 1.7 for each company. So phase one is a maximum of 200K, because phase one is when we determine whether you can walk the talk or not, or whether you just have a beautiful resume. Phase two, phase three, and phase four tends to be up to a 500K maximum. So up to $1.7 million. And I'm not going to basically share how many companies that we award. What I will give you is point you to what happened in our prior call. You know, it is not one. It is not two. It is many. You know, and like I said, I think it was close to 10 the last time. The other piece to your point, Manu, is, we are very aware that it could very well be, you know, everybody could basically focus on one SDK and nobody could come for the other three. I think that is part of our, you know, how we manage our selection process as well, right? I think we are interested in moving all of that forward. We are hopeful that basically multiple companies will apply to all of them, at least, you know, one or more of them. And we're not going to be that desperate enough that basically we're going to actually award a crappy application just because they were the only applier. In that particular case, you know, we have in the past actually closed the call. Then if we did not get the type of talent that we're looking for, have in the future reopened the call again as well. We are more interested in doing the right job here than basically, you know, checking the box here on this. I think there was one more question that you asked me that I am missing. I'm happy to answer that separately. And if I don't, I'll definitely answer it during our industry day on Friday. We definitely, you know, we will encourage the companies that that are working on the same open source SDK to actually work on them together and out in the open, because it reduces the amount of work that they need to do, and it also it allows them to focus on their product roadmap while getting help for those type of components as well, right? So, yep. So multi-tracking, and, you know, making sure there are multiple awards that hopefully cover all of them, and, up to $1.7 million per company, that is selected.
Great. Thank you.
Awesome. Carrie, I think you're going to get the last question in the last 30 seconds or so, and hopefully we get a good quick answer. So.
All right. Yeah. I'll try to be really quick here. Hi, Anil. I think this is in relation to what you're saying about policy and the validation layer that is over all of this tech. And what I would love to hear more about someday when we have an opportunity to talk about is that layer, because in education and workforce, as we start bringing issuers, employers, verifiers on board, it's actually that layer that is where they have all the questions. And it's where we don't have a lot of answers yet. I just sort of wanted to make a comment, sort of question about that. I don't think we have time to get into it, but love to talk to you about it sometime.
Would love to have that conversation. At a fundamental level, particularly when it comes to, you know, digital wallets, I believe there is a set of things that we can check for using some sort of a cryptographic challenge response. But there is a set of things that we cannot check for in that manner that requires some manner of a, you know, assessment, independent assessment into the weeds. And that results in some manner of hopefully a trust mark that can be consumed. Now, in order to do all of that assessment, you need those criterias. And what I don't see any work is basically those criterias being fleshed out in a manner that is broadly usable. And we are hoping to so encourage that through this call. So, happy to chat, particularly regarding the education vertical, because we do consume your credentials, particularly on the USCIS side. On that note, Mike, I appreciate all of the questions. Thank you for taking the time, to invite me. I turn it back over to you, sir.
Thank you for going a minute over here, and, really appreciate the time as always. I think this is a great call. I think it hopefully spurs a lot of thoughts from the community about engagement with existing work items, things like universal wallet, et cetera, and revisiting some things that may have fallen. voice on. So thank you. Unless that was an accidental cue.
All right. Then please, everybody, I would welcome you to register for our Industry Day on Friday. Please have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you all.